We're joined now, I hope, by Christopher Black, and he's written a book, Beneath the Clouds, Christopher Black, The Struggle for Truth and Justice Can Turn Deadly. How you doing?
Yeah, I'm pretty good. How are you, Phil? Well, thanks for having me on.
Well, I'm glad to be talking to you because, well, first of all, where our listeners should know, you did some outstanding work at the International Criminal Tribunal for Rwanda, as did one of your heroes of this book, oddly enough. But really helped clear the story of the reality of Rwanda 1994, which I want to get into a little bit later. But I'll tell you first off, you've really written a nice page-turning book. I got to tell you, I don't ordinarily read this genre. Can you characterize what genre we're talking about, by the way?
Well, I found it hard to characterize it, but we decided to characterize it as a political thriller because it's about a murder case which leads people into involvement with greater politics and political struggles and other issues in society. But it's basically a thriller with political overtones. That's how I characterized it.
Yeah. Well, I tell our listeners it's got a foundation which a lot of people like. By the way, this if you want to get to know the city of Toronto and where you might find a good breakfast and maybe a good lunch and where you should go for a drink.
Right.
And also what you will find in the various regions of the town. You touched on a lot of things, and it did very nicely. I have to tell you, I'm very impressed, is that, as I say, it's a page-turner kind of book, which it's a challenge, right? If you say you're writing a thriller, you better start getting thrilled.
Right, yeah, that was difficult to do. I wanted to say something in the novel, but I wanted to make it fast-paced so people would pay attention to it. So.
Well, you had people, you know, in dangerous situations. You have people being shot. You have the car chases. You do all that. And frankly, that's hard work. And then you have to maintain the plot and who the characters are and where the reader doesn't have to say, wait a minute, who's David?
Right, that took me
What happened to Mariana? You know, that kind of thing. And you pull that off very nicely. Actually, you know, me, I'm a political animal. So I'm thinking, well, I'm not going to – I wonder, I'm looking for a speech or this or that. Yeah. And meanwhile, though, you got me, you know, pulled into it. I got to know what happens next. So
right.
I really urge people. It's called, by the way, Beneath the Clouds. And the subtitle is The Struggle for Truth and Justice Can Turn Deadly. And it's Christopher Black. I hope people will get the book. Now, one of the characters in the book has been a lawyer at the International Tribunal for Rwanda, although it's not – I think you wanted to make it a little bit generic, right? You wanted people to understand that you could be practicing almost anywhere representing someone in Africa – And in the international, so-called international court system.
Correct. Yeah, I tried to keep it. That was the context background, but that was always the dark cloud in the background, that system, and the domestic system also.
Yeah. Now, your character, the lawyer based in Toronto, tries to tell his colleagues, and I like the fact that you raised this because you and myself and others who've followed the events of Rwanda in 1994 are up against a wall of disbelief or delusion where when we talk, people think we're deluded, which is kind of a scary situation where you're trying to report something which is rather matter of fact, and they look at you like you've lost your mind. By the way, in your court case with General Dendilimana, you proved not that you had lost your mind, but everybody else had lost theirs when they attacked him.
Yeah.
And you include a general in here called Lemaire, I think.
Yeah.
It sounds like almost an echo there. By the way, I can't remember the name of the real guy now. I've got your General Dallaire in my – oh, no, I did it just then.
Right, there
I
you
found
go.
It by accident.
Yeah.
Now, we want to – I think our listeners would like to know – there have been, in your court work, and the court work of many defense lawyers, by the way, let's credit those who've really worked so hard for so many years, they've established so much. However, the court work didn't get the attention and respect it deserved, and people who want to know the truth are going to have to go back and look at those cases. I would, for example, invite them to study your case in defense of General Dendilimana, who was ultimately acquitted. Completely, and it was, thank God he's with his family in Belgium. But now we've had a revelation, and I want your thoughts about it. Judge Louise Arbour has given an interview through the Globe and Mail, and she says to the Globe, yes, we were aware of evidence against General Paul Kagame that he probably shot that plane, or that we were aware of the credible evidence of his crime and also the crime of the RPF. However, we couldn't do it at the time. Mm-hmm. And she said, it's one of my regrets. Well, what do you make of that?
Well, she used the excuse that she couldn't do anything with it because the pressure from the very Paul Kagame himself and his government wouldn't let them establish the evidence or bring it forward. And it's a complete lie. Well, I mean, the main problem with bringing that case forward was herself, because she, Ralph Goldstone, the former prosecutor before her, had started an official UN investigation, assigned staff and investigator Michael Hourigan, the Australian lawyer, with a team to find out who shot down the plane. They probably thought it was what the RPF complained made fabrications was Hutu extremists. But they found out, in fact, it was the Rwanda Patriotic Front with Western help. Mm-hmm. And when Michael Hourigan took that to Louise Arbour, who was then the prosecutor following Goldstone, she was at first enthusiastic, but then she turned and killed that investigation and seized the only disc he had with the information on it, and that was deep sixed. Mm-hmm. And we're told by, I think it was Jim Lyons, the FBI agent who worked there, that she did so on orders from the U.S. Embassy in the Netherlands, I believe.
Uh-huh.
So she then became complicit in the mass murder of all those people on that plane, because she becomes an accessory after the fact.
Yeah,
she's hiding evidence about who actually committed those murders.
Yeah, it's a cover-up.
Right, and now for her to complain that, well, we know we couldn't do anything, that's just nonsense. She refused to do anything. She could have done something very quickly. She had all the statements. She had witnesses. She could have laid an indictment very quickly and called for him to be arrested.
Yes.
But there was political pressure, and she refused to do it.
Well, let's talk about the political pressure, because, again, you know, I don't know if the Globe is going to read its own paper and think about this, but her successor, Carlo Del Ponte, made a little foray into this business of, shall we maybe find one or two of these guys to charge?
Right.
And by the way, they weren't talking about going after the top man. They were just talking about looking at a few cases.
Right.
And something happened there involving the Americans. You could want to tell what that was?
Yeah, she says in a book she wrote that, or an interview she gave, that she was called to a meeting with the U.S., with American officials, and was told blankly to drop those charges, or she'd face trouble herself.
Yeah.
And so she dropped them. I mean, if she had real integrity, she would have called a press conference and told the world that this was going on,
yeah,
or resigned. But she did. She played the game and went along with it, and did kill those charges.
To refer people to your book, it is a dangerous game.
Yes.
And when you say, for example, she should have had courage, we all agree with you, except that I think we're starting to appreciate what risk people run. They take on these big, well-paying, glamorous jobs. But if you don't toe the line, you get pretty risky.
Right. Things happen to you.
Yeah. Well, now, in this case, incidentally, my memory is that the Pierre Prosper, someone I know, got along with, he was, first of all, a prosecutor at the ICTR, prosecuting.
Right.
Then he got the job of the America's, they used to call him the genocide ambassador. I forget what actual title was.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
He, according to her, and I believe this came out in the BBC documentary that Dallaire and others wished to suppress, but he told them that Del Ponte, was called into the office, again with a Kagame representative, and told, don't go after these people.
Right. Yeah, it was very blatant exertion of control by the Americans, and the same happened to Arbour. It was a direct call. And the same thing happened, though, with Arbour when she indicted Milosevic when NATO was bombing Yugoslavia, and Germany and France were thinking about pulling out. To stop that stopping of the war, Madeleine Albright called, and Clinton called up Arbour and told her to issue an indictment. And she did it the next day.
Well,
So it works both ways. You can
remember
stop
when,
charges or make them as they blow the whistle.
I can remember when Louise Arbour had her job interview with Madeleine Albright when they were talking about whether they were going to name her. She went to New York and met Madeleine, and they went shopping together.
Yes.
And I don't know what Madeleine bought that day. I may be perhaps a prosecutor.
Yes.
Probably matched her purse.
Right.
You know what I like?
Yeah, that's what goes on.
Pardon me?
That's what goes on. They call the shots.
Yeah, and your book really helps with that. I should tell our listeners that this is Christopher Black, and the book is Beyond the Clouds. The struggle for truth and justice can turn deadly. Without giving away the ending of the book, you do take up this matter because your story ends up with Americans also showing up in Canada, which, by the way, won't surprise Canadians, great powers tend to, and particularly the one to the south is referred in your book, intervene in a way that startles people. I think that's rather helpful.
I read that last chapter.
It's well done. As I was reading it, I thought, well, this is a crime story, and I'm going to get it all figured out at the end, and I hope the good guys walk away without being shot.
Right.
However, you brought in, rather importantly, and I think most authors would have missed it, what is likely to happen in the scenario you write, in which involves the U.S. Interest and other states' interest in a matter to do involving Canadian lawyers.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the ending was...
Phones ring.
Right, phones ring and things happen, and there is no ending. The struggle goes on. The whole story was to try and tell people not to give up, but the struggle goes on. You think you've won, but you haven't won. Mm-hmm. The struggle is constant; it has to be constant, and otherwise, people cannot be free unless the struggle is constant.
Mm-hmm. Well, now this,
forget that.
And I got to be sure I ask you this, and because this is if people always, they want truth, they want justice, etc. And as your characters are continually saying, such thoughts give them headaches because they never see any of either truth or justice. But now, this raises the matter of the decision by the government of Burundi, the government of Kenya, I believe. Certainly, by the way, nobody's mentioning Namibia. The saying to the International Criminal Court, you're actually the International Caucasian Court,
right.
And we are now going to exit this joint.
Right.
And over the past weekend, it turned out the leader of Russia said he's going to take his name off the ICC commitment. Yeah, by the way, the Western press is not reminding us that Bill Clinton signed it, and Bush said, I'm taking his name off, and he did.
Right.
So now what do you make of this this exodus from the ICC?
Well, the ICC's provoked it. I mean, it's just a reaction to what they've done, which is act as a totally political court, a tool to rein in powers that they are resisting the interests of the West and to threaten others in case they decide they might want to do that. Because the ICC, it's accused of being racist, and you can't deny that in a way, but that misses the point because they've only charged African leaders who stand in the way of Western interests, but not African leaders.
I rest my case. It's racist.
Yes, but they don't charge African leaders like Kagame Museveni or others who fulfill their interests.
I'm glad they don't because, it would only be show business anyway.
Exactly. And in the case of Russia, finally acted to remove its signature, which the Americans had done many years ago, but the press didn't mention that, is because they issued a report, the prosecutor, about Ukraine and Crimea and took up the NATO position on the entire line. So it was quite clear it's not an objective. The investigations aren't objective, and the court itself is not objective. And many commentators have pointed out that the prosecutor is really a tool of Germany, France, and Britain, the United States.
Yeah. And they practice a kind of tokenism which is embarrassing for people who lived through the 50s and 60s. They say, we have an African here who works for us.
Right.
And
the African prosecutor they have now was a prosecutor at the ICTR, and she was part of the team that suppressed all this information about the crimes of the RPF. So she knows this information exists, but she never resigned or said anything to complain about it. So she was a known quantity to them, that she would play the ball. So she was given that job.
I once heard a Rwanda tribunal prosecutor say, you have to play the game.
You have to play the game, right?
And we all looked at our feet because we did not intend to play the game.
No. Now, and they didn't expect that.
You definitely didn't. You drove them crazy.
Well, I think the Canadian lawyers in general, because I was very proud that the strongest defenses came from the Canadian lawyers.
Yes, it was C. Van Dixon who stood up in court and said, Mr. Prosecutor, we want you to disclose to us any information you might have on the shooting down of the plane. And he said, I don't have any such information.
Yeah. I think we were there.
Turned out he was a liar.
I think they thought that lawyers that went there would be people company. Who just wanted to line their pockets and
company
do what
lawyers.
They said. Company lawyers, right. But when they found that some of the lawyers were actually willing to find out what really went on and reveal it, they didn't like that. They tried to stop us in every way they could.
In the last, let me just ask you this, and I want you to reprise the story. You had some dealings with the ICC, and on this program, you told us about some stunts they pulled. You had a defense lawyer. He had investigators. They were continually challenged. The ICC prosecutors played the game of accusing defense lawyers and their staff of tampering with witnesses, bribing witnesses. And they went whole hog, and they arrested some people. Can you tell that story?
Yeah, there's a case involving Mr. Bemba, who was once vice president of Zaire, the Democratic Republic of Congo. He was running for president. It was arranged that he would be charged and arrested, so taken out of Congolese politics. And the charges were really vague, and he had a defense team. And the defense team found out that several of the witnesses who were used to confirm the charges against him had been more or less bribed or scripted by the prosecution or people connected to the prosecution and in Congo. And they were going to bring that out. And I think a few days after this began circulating, they were arrested in night raids in Congo and different countries where they were staying at the time. Arrested at 2 o'clock in the morning and then hauled off to prison. And this is done by the prosecution, not by anybody.
And they weren't they taken to Europe and put in jail?
They were taken to Europe, put in shackles, taken to Europe, thrown in prison, and they were held there for months. And I think they got bail finally. But they are now charged. They were taken off the case. Their careers are ruined. They're facing charges and large fees for hiring lawyers themselves to defend themselves against these charges, which were that they were bribing witnesses. Mm-hmm. And, of course, this is coming from the prosecutor. But the defense doesn't have that right. The defense can't say, we want the prosecution arrested because we know they're bribing witnesses.
Yes.
So you see that when they have a defense which they think is going to be strong, they'll try and eliminate it one way or the other. Yeah. And now they've got some other team in there. I don't know how they're doing. But
yeah. Well, I'm really glad
it disrupted the trial. So.
Yeah, of course. It made a mockery. I'm really glad that you could relate that because, again, we're not told these things.
No.
These are not known to people.
Well, one of the things is that the press, which is the ICTR, the major BBC, were there all every day covering these trials, but they never, ever reported what the defense was doing or what we revealed in the trials. It was always prosecution handouts. That's all they printed.
Well, you were the bad guys.
Right.
And they came to report white hat, black hat.
Yeah.
Well, Christopher, we're really glad you could be with us. The book, Beneath the Clouds, The Struggle for Truth and Justice Can Turn Deadly. It's Christopher Black. I hope people, this day and age, you just put that in and you can order it yourself. But it's a Toronto-based crime thriller.
Right.
And
I tried to make it exciting. People have said it is a page-turner. Nobody's
I think the last,
being dull.
The last chapter would make people really meditate about international justice and also about the power, a hegemonic power of the U.S. And so I congratulate you on that, and I hope people read the book. And it's been very helpful. Thanks for talking to us.
Well, thanks very much for having me on the call.
Sure thing.
Okay.
That's Christopher Black, and you're listening to Taylor Report. And you can find us the Facebook / The Taylor Report. And also, we are taylor-report.com, where you can hear all these programs. I want to apologize, by the way, that we had a little sound problem with Danny Haifong at the beginning, but he's well worth it for people. Just stay focused, as they say, during a crisis, and you will be able to follow all of what Danny had to say. And so, Phil, let's do some more Leonard Peltier. We got to get the man out of prison.
Yes, and there's a retired politician who just might be the guy to help us, is Warren Almond, who says his biggest regret in his professional life was the fact that he was in charge of that file when Peltier was extradited. And
when you say in charge of the trial, it was must have been a hearing or something.
He was the Solicitor General, and he was the one whose job it was to go before a judge and say, I have an extradition request from the United States. And he will now tell you, I mean, I think he's still alive. He's been retired for many years.
Did you see that quote?
Oh, that was a long time ago. But let's dig it out.
Warren Almond is ashamed of his role in the removal of Leonard Peltier.
Right.
And now we have Dakota Access Pipeline.
Right.
We have Native Canadians who are speaking out and demonstrating.
Right.
It's time to show a token of respect for their national identity by returning Mr. Peltier, who was improperly removed from Canada.
And who has a home to go to in this country because he was adopted by a native band in Alberta. So he's living out his last days, and he should not be in a U.S. prison.
Not
when he's
at all.
Doing that.
And particularly, if you say Dakota Access Pipeline, go to Susan Sarandon, by the way, our leader, and find out about all these things. Just put asterisk as a show of goodwill before we put a stop to Dakota Access Pipeline. Free Leonard Peltier and Mumia Jamal. And that's it for the Taylor Report. I want to thank Hanny and Phil, and thank you guys again for all the support for the station. We still want $75,000 just for the fun of it, but thank you for supporting the Taylor Report. See you next week.